everyone, and a huge welcome to today's Under the Spotlight with Jackie Lee Jo. My name's Sophie Devonshire, and I'm the CEO of the Marketing Society, which is a role I've held for a very short period of time now, but I've been loving being part of this incredible global network of progressive marketing leaders and supporting our purpose, which is to empower brave leaders in marketing. As a community, when we come together, when we connect, when we have conversations, it helps us be more brave and more brilliant at what we do. And we can help each other do well in our careers and our lives, and do good in business, society, and the world. And today's session is a great example of how we love to share the stories and the insights and the experiences of those people who've made an impact to help inspire others to take action or to think differently. I'm so delighted to be hosting this Under the Spotlight session. It's a little bit different the way we do our Under the Spotlight sessions. No PowerPoint, no slides, just a straightforward, honest, open, unprepared, informal chat with people about their lives and their experiences and what they think about marketing and its role. So I'd like to introduce you in a second to our amazing speaker. But first of all, I want to say a proper hello and thank you to everybody who's dialing in today. One of the hardest things about doing this is that I'd really love to be able to see you all and have a chat with everybody individually, and we can't do it in this way. But it'd be great if you would come and say hello to us on the chat. I'd like to hear where you're dialing in from. And I'd also like to ask a question. One of the things that's been on everybody's mind at the moment is the fact that we are reaching the final third of this crazy year. And there's a little bit of a back to school feeling. And I'm just wondering, for you sitting at home, zooming in around this, would you tell me, what's your goal for the rest of 2020? What are you going to try and achieve in the last part of this crazy bonkers year? I'd love to hear from you. Come on to chat. Let's check the chat function is working. You will be able to use the chat to comment all the way through, and we'd love you to do that, please. There's also a Q&A function. So if you've got questions for Jackie that you'd like to pose, we will have time at the end to ask a few questions of her, as well as she and I chatting in the early part of it all. So let's have a look, see where everybody's dialing in from today. Morning, Thomas. Hello, Linda. Great, great to see everybody dialing in. Where are you coming in from today? Come and tell us on chat. Come and say hello. Come and connect. It's really nice to hear from you. No, we're not alone. Excellent. Simon, good luck with setting up your consultancy business this year. What a great time to start something new. And Dunblane, Amanda, hi. We've got people coming in. Lots of people from Scotland, of course, our brilliant Scottish community. Last goal, I love this, is to remain positive, regardless of how things go. Yeah, we still don't know what's going to happen. And Nicola, thrive. What a great objective for the end of this year. rebuilding relationships that have struggled over the lockdown period. Yeah, I think we've definitely started off thinking this is a short sprint of time and we catch up with people afterwards. And now it's turning into a marathon. We've got to find ways of connecting as well. Goal, Carol, to be safe, healthy and happy. Great. And planning a strong start for 2021. Oh, by the way, we have got an event coming up soon, which will be of interest to anybody who's currently working out what on earth they're going to do in 2021. Our global conversation at the end of this month brings together a number of different marketers from around this world to talk about how do we plan in a year where we don't know quite what's going to happen next year when there's so much pressure on it all. Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in and being part of today. Don't forget to keep commenting as we go. We'd love to hear from you. And please do put any questions you have on the chat. So now I would like to introduce you to our wonderful speaker today. Jackie Lee Jo has had over 20 years digital and marketing experience across media, technology, telco and aviation companies. She's worked with some of the most impressive and impactful brands out there: Virgin Mobile, Carphone Warehouse, Skype, BBC Worldwide, and now Netflix. And while she was at the BBC, she had oversight of more than 300 brands globally. And I met Jackie when she was working at the BBC and was blown away by her energy and her sense of pace. She has actually lived in various countries across the world in her career as well. And so some of the things I think we'll end up talking about today, you know, give us a bit of a global perspective as well. In fact, I think at one point in her life, she changed jobs three times, lived in three different countries and had three kids. So lots to share there. And when I spoke to Jackie before she'd start, last time we spoke, we were talking about how do you get the pace right. It's a little bit of research for the book I was writing around pace setting leaders. So we talked a lot about speed. But since then, she has been the global CMO at Netflix, which I think, what's the latest figures on Netflix? They have 183 million subscribers, pretty big company, and 16 million new subscribers this year, right, Jackie?
We have talked 193 million, Sophie.
She knows her stats. It's perfect. And when we talked last time, Jackie, we're talking, you know, at pace about making things happen. This right now is a brilliant opportunity for us to slow down together and to reflect on what's happened for you in 2020. Thank you so much for joining us, Jackie.
Lovely to be here, Sophie. Hi, everybody.
So where should we start? Let's start not with what's happened this year. Let's start with your story, Jackie. I'd love to hear a little bit about how you got started on this journey. Tell us a bit about where it's all started for you.
I think, Sophie, that there are probably two things that have really driven all of my choices in life. One of them being, and I think this happens, it's very much a byproduct of growing up in the sleepy suburbs of Sydney. One is this ridiculously acute case of FOMO. And the other one has certainly been a lot of serendipity along the way. And I think that combination of wanting to be at the center of things, of the action in general, plus being really lucky, I think, to have a lot of opportunities and being open to opportunities along the way, have kind of really forged a lot of my path. Some of that has been FOMO locationally. So, you know, I left Australia towards the very, very late 90s, 2000s, and moved from Sydney to Melbourne, to Sydney, to New York, to London, to Sydney, to London, and then most recently, you know, straddling LA and Sydney. That's just been crazy, right? And my partner in crime, Rob, has kind of been there on the entire journey with us. And yes, as you said, along the way, we've managed to have three children and a boy dog. So four boys in my family, unbelievable. And actually managed to, yes, start a new job after every maternity leave. And in between child number two and three, actually changed countries twice. So we are a bit of a stickler for, you know, I think a certain level of speed and craziness in general. And then I think part of the FOMO has been around needing to be not just locationally at the center of everything, but vocationally at the center of everything. So I've certainly seen, I guess, the rise of e-commerce in the very late 90s and the impact that that had on aviation and really the removal in about a 5-year period of like those middle tiers of wholesalers and retailers in that market. I then flipped over to New York for the very, very end of the dot-com boom. Really, it was just the start of the bust. I got there too late, but was doing a lot of e-commerce and looking at the transition into kind of e-business there. And then I kind of kept the party going on by flipping over to Europe to join Orange and really got to see those early days of the rise in mobility, first in Europe and then in the world, and realizing that promise around mobile, which was, you know, really around people, time, places, and payment and all that that could bring. And then I flipped over into over-the-top communications with Skype. You know, at that moment, Skype had 800 million registered users, 330 million kind of active users, and ran the audience marketing teams there, as well as the broadcast and entertainment teams. And then kind of flipped over to the BBC, and looked at life on the other side, I guess, you know, being in an incumbent and looking at facing the disruption, what to do to kind of evolve our IP into the world of digital. And then finally, just as I was actually on the verge of coming back towards Australia, took a detour via Netflix and had a great time at Netflix, and just the sheer scale of Netflix has been unbelievable. So that's kind of my journey. It's been bloody great.
I love it. I love the positivity of in your attitude there, but also that point of the thrill of being at the heart of change. So changing industries, being able to shape what's happening and being part of that ride. And yes, of course, there's a serendipity there. There is in everybody's lives, but the choices you've clearly made have been to be part of them at probably quite challenging times. I mean, those aren't easy roles or easy times to be part of it. But yeah, timing is everything, isn't it? In terms of business and personal life.
It is. And I think, you know, that's always been the constant challenge, isn't it? It's trying to figure out how to kind of satisfy, you know, aspects of your personal and family life with your career and make it work. And, you know, for the large part, Robert and I have between us kind of made different compromises, different choices along the way as we kind of straddle it. Sometimes we've moved countries because of an opportunity for Robert, sometimes for me. And I think that kind of to-ing and fro-ing has always been kind of part of the brilliance of our relationship. And I think really it's only been the most recent period where we've been straddling LA and Sydney, and in fact before that London and Sydney, where it's actually been much more challenging.
Yeah. So let's talk about this year then. So you're now joining us today from Sydney. It's the evening there in Sydney.
Yes, it is.
And what
I really should have a gin and tonic in my hand. You realise this? It'd be very good. I've got the tea.
And this year, honestly, it's been such a whirlwind for so many different people, but your particular experience, tell us how you've ended up being in Sydney, how you've managed what's happened this year, and quite what an impact COVID's had on your plans.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think our straddling two cities, which always takes a lot of planning and scheduling and really us being very organized. So we had at the very beginning of the year, I guess, we had really organized travel schedules. We knew what we were all doing. We'd even Excel spreadsheeted it all. We kind of knew how much time we were going to have together and to make the most of the time we had together. But we did have this split existence between Sydney and LA. And so what COVID has done is really just to kind of wreak absolute chaos and havoc on our carefully laid out what we thought was going to be a really well kind of managed life. And that's just the way it is, right? So, you know, when it all happened, it was so interesting because I left LA on March 12th. And we had our first suspected case on the studio. So we actually closed the studio that day. But I left that weekend thinking that I was going to be there for a week. So I thought I was coming back from my 1 week's holiday to celebrate my 17th wedding anniversary with my husband. We had it all set up. We had the hotel booked. It was all going to happen. And of course, it all just that weekend went totally crazy. So the shelter in place happened that weekend. And then by the Friday, the end of the week, the borders are closed in Australia. And so I just, you know, so I've been living in my 1 week's clothing ever since. It's been mad. And of course, when you're pivoting, I guess for me, most of my jobs recently, Sophie, I've been like in the center of time zone gravity, right? The schedule, although global, tends to rotate around you. I've literally remembered why I left Australia in the first place, which is how bad the time zone is for like running global teams, because I've literally been starting my day at midnight and running right the way through to about 6 p.m., 7 p.m., having dinner with the kids, 3 hours sleep, and then back up again. And that's just been the rhythm of it.
That's just insane. I mean, keeping your energy up through that. I mean, what a challenge. I mean, so many questions about how you've dealt with that personally and with your teams. I mean, working in that different time zone and then mobilizing teams remotely, everybody's been trying to deal with that remote management and inspiration, but new job, you know, big challenges for the company, yeah, and being in a different time zone and not with people. What have you done this year to help, you know, manage teams? I mean, I know you're passionate about teams and how they work together. Are there things you've done to make that more possible when you've been so far away and in the wrong time zone?
Yeah, I mean, it's been so tricky, hasn't it? You know, I think on the one side, you know, when these things happen and you really do feel like you're walking into much more of a crisis moment, which has become such an extenuated crisis moment, right? So much of it is really about being in the moment, right? And that's where all those tools, right? Slack, you know, VCs and everything have really kind of come into play. And we've used them, as everybody has done, really extensively through this period. But on top of that, I think for Netflix, there have been additional, you know, there's been an additional level of intensity to this year than we had really anticipated. And for us, very much, it has been about making sure that with the teams, we're constantly on the pulse of consumer sentiment and that we're really understanding what is going on in conversations around the world and ultimately how we can be most helpful, right? So as people are like plumbing the depths of our catalog, either looking for new content or comfy, you know, television series, that we're actually understanding that and responding to it and being absolutely helpful the whole way through this time. I think the other thing that the teams and I have been dealing with, and it's been quite a concerted effort, is just as everybody has had, but certainly in Netflix, a whole new level of intensity around global conversations that have been going on. You know, things have just gone like this in levels of intensity, and we've seen more global conversations around titles this time than ever before, right? And it is really just at a time like this, people just need to feel like they're part of a moment, you know, that they're sharing in the zeitgeist. And so we're seeing these things trend much more intensively, and we've been riding that, and we've clearly had to bring energy into the team in terms of kind of experimenting and innovating with that. And I think knowing that we have a job to do, right, that we can take action and that it's meaningful action for people at this moment, has kind of helped us kind of keep the energy levels going through that period. Extremely tough, right? And then I think the other thing that we've really thought about is I came into the year thinking that we were going to have different levels of growth around the world and that I was going to be seeing kind of new growth in certain markets and maturing growth in other markets. Clearly, we've had the tailwinds of COVID. And so we've pivoted, right? Pivoted to looking at opportunities to address needs of audiences that really up until now were not open to our signals, right? Or are not interested in our programming. So, you know, with the gap in sports programming, we've been able to come out with Formula One, Drive to Survive, and The Last Dance, and really kind of cater for audiences, you know, that have been desperately missing their sports content. And on the other side, we've been able to deal with the gaping hole, really, that has been some of blockbuster movies. And so there's also been new opportunities and new energy in all of it.
So it's fascinating hearing all that. So there's a few things in there to draw out, that ability to keep your decision-making and your responsiveness clear by being as close as possible to the consumer pulse all the way through. Sounds like it's been absolutely critical for the teams, keeping the energy up.
Has been.
Yeah, and so the teams feeling like they can take action and that they can do something about it and that they're part of something that will help and part of a moment and a movement. That human understanding of the customer, but also the teams and connecting that up.
We've been closest to it, you know, Sophie, that's the thing. It's been so visceral, like a lot of responses going on around the world, you know, that it's been so critical. Like even when you start consumer sentiment tracking around a particular title, day upon day, week upon week, you're actually seeing a different, you know, type of conversation go on. It's really fascinating to kind of see where conversations have been leading on some of the key titles.
But critical for both those things to make sure that the technology tracks both that and also enables your own global conversations and team conversations. You know, it makes such a difference to have that right technology in place.
You absolutely need it, Yeah. And tools like Slack, because quite frankly, I think conversations on what we might have considered local titles have trended globally much faster than we expected. So, you know, sometimes in the planning of it, you think, oh, well, this is a local title. It's not being designated a global title. It becomes a global title. And there, and then you've got to make sure that all of the teams working on social around the world are absolutely connected and seeing the trending and seeing the conversation, able to kind of understand what's going on there and anticipate what might come through as it comes into market.
Yeah, but being set up to move as fast as possible. And it sounds like you've got that going. I'm conscious that right across your career, your skills have been very much linked to looking at brands from that global perspective. I mean, taking that Netflix model, rolling it out across the globe, what else do you think is important for somebody who's a global marketer, you know, especially in such changing times? What's been important to you?
I think one thing that I've spent a lot of time on this year has been looking at our brand and making sure that we are developing out a brand narrative that feels universal, that feels like it can be applied right around the world. And it was the one thing as I kind of came into Netflix that hadn't really been focused on at all, in fact. And you know, in a world, particularly in the world that we're about to walk into, where Disney Plus was coming into market, HBO Max was coming into market, we had the start of Peacock, you know, many more players. That kind of old scenario where it used to be us against Amazon Prime, against Hulu, which were all over the top new players, that was going to become null and void, right? You were up against players in market that it had generations upon generations of kind of deep set emotional connection with audiences, right? And so one thing that I've spent a lot of time on really is to look at what is that universal positioning for Netflix and how can it kind of tie into its strengths and remind people about what it is they love about Netflix, and to be able to kind of put a pin on some of that thinking. And when we look at that, you know, we're looking at that as a global proposition. So it has to be tested in market. We've got to be able to iterate with that thinking and evolve it. Even in the brand campaign work, which we've literally just been released a couple of weeks ago, you know, the translation of One Story Away is not straightforward. So, you know, being able to understand all of that, build out a brand platform that can be adapted no matter what stage of market development you are in, centered on kind of human truths around understanding how that richness, that plethora of Netflix stories can really cater for the multifaceted nature of me, right? And I had a quote that I kind of came in with, which is Walt Whitman's quote, "I am large, I contain multitudes." So, you know, that notion that I have many facets of me and in that I inhabit many story worlds, and there are moments where my story world will connect with your story world, and in that connection we kind of form a bond. That coupled with Eric having this kind of line in his head kicking around for a couple of years, only one story away, all tied together. And I think the other strength of Netflix globally is its compelling combination of the product and of the shows. Mm-hmm. And so when we fuse that together, you want to recognize both of its strengths, because that is actually what sets it apart. And so we were very keen to make sure that we put some brand equity into our product feature set as well. And of course, the play bar is the perfect metaphor for the journey. So this notion of me to we, right, of watching to seeing, these are all kind of aspects of the brand platform, and they are wholly universal, Sophie, and we know that. And it's been rolled out, therefore, in 27 countries and localized, because it all, you know, everything we do now has to feel like we're off the world, right?
It's an incredibly exciting campaign, and the idea of stories behind it all generally, you know, that universal global insight, it's incredible. I'm interested to hear a bit more about how easy it was to make that happen and bring it together. And, you know, I'm conscious of quite how much you've achieved just in a short time.
Oh, yeah. Try doing that in COVID. Frick. So you know what happens is you kind of set your strategy and then you go do the band tour around the world, which we did at the beginning of the year. And then COVID hits and you kind of go. And, you know, we at Netflix, we'd never done a global campaign like this before. And we'd certainly never done a brand campaign before. Right? And, you know, you have to own it at that moment. You've got to go, okay, we're going to go. And so, you know, part of what's kept us energized is the excitement of that. Mm-hmm. But we have done brainstorming, we've done all our creative work, and we had to do our insights testing, we had to pitch agencies, we had to select an agency, we had to kind of work for the first time really as a creative collective. So many firsts to do in a time like this. Really difficult. In fact, I kind of figure now that I've done an entire brand strategy in COVID, can do almost anything because it's just been crazy. I mean, try being on for creative, because you know AKQA, the lead kind of team working on it, they had connected you know hubs across Japan and you know Germany and all over the world, but the core hub was in São Paulo, and so I was doing 2 a.m. 3 a.m. creative meetings. Bloody hell. Anyway, it was all good. It's out. I can celebrate.
But there's a brilliant point there about, you know, we know that resilience is built through those type of experiences.
And that's right.
Something like that. So as you're reflecting on your time at Netflix, you know, was that the hardest part of it? You know, what was the hardest part for you of your time at Netflix, and what was the best?
I think COVID's made it really tricky. You know, I think some of the challenges certainly we've had is, you know, the ups and downs and the intensity and the overwhelming kind of nature of it has affected different countries, different regions of the world at different times. I think actually it's more a reflection on COVID than it has been about Netflix. Although Netflix's culture, which is so relentless, actually doesn't make it easy for people to feel like they can take a step back and replenish and find new energy. And so in some ways, some of the work that we're doing did that, but of course it doesn't wholly compensate. I think that's been difficult. I think the other aspect of it, and it really does come down to what we talked about, which is it's very difficult to keep a sense of community when you're in Australia on a VC, you know, at midnight with the rest of the world. And there's certainly been moments where you feel the community slipping away, and no amount of VCs or emails or willing it to be the case can entirely make up, especially at moments when you want to galvanize teams of having people physically present. And there's something about these you know, conversations that can be very intimate. But when you're trying to kind of bring communities in to dynamically engage, it just doesn't work the same way. It always feels a little bit more orchestrated than you would want it to be. And I think they're the most difficult things that we've had to deal with, certainly with my teams this year.
And that puts personal pressure on you as the leader.
It really does. Yeah, it really does. It does. I mean, I think that part of the challenge of being you know, on a VC on your own is you actually feel like you're on your own. I think, and part of what I thrive on is feeling like we're all in it together and that we're all collaborative and that we're going to work these things out. You know, part of the process that I love about what I do is that mucking in and kind of getting that path forward together. That's felt much more difficult. And in a world where there's so much uncertainty, people are wanting much more straight direction. You're finding you're having to give direction when, you know, you would prefer it to be a much more participative process.
Yes, that's interesting. As leadership has evolved to listening and bringing everybody on board at the same time, things do need to happen fast right now. And there is that sense of direction. And this question about community and people feeling alone, I think, becomes increasingly important for those of us in marketing who are, you know, feeling so alone when we're trying to deal with our day-to-day jobs. It's part of what we are trying to do as a society, to create those conversations and those connections and try and work out and also empathize with the fact this is hard right now.
It is hard.
Brilliant things. What do you think? I mean, because this is a great moment now for you on reflection and thinking through what's happened this year, but also in your journey so far, what do you think you've learnt about yourself as a leader across these difficult times and across your whole career?
Well, I think I've recognised how much I thrive on the energy of others. I always knew it was a dependency problem, Sophie, and I've certainly felt it more than I've ever felt it before. You know, I really do thrive on the creative energy of others. I've learned that about myself, and I am not a creature of deep reflection. Most often, I'm kind of a creature who likes lots of distraction. And you know, actually I've had more time to really take stock of myself, and really needed to kind of dig in and really need to find reserves that I didn't know I had, and try to kind of drive forth that energy. You know, you have to put more energy into kind of managing teams remotely than you would when you're kind of thriving off that dimension. I've certainly learned a long, hard lesson on that too.
Yeah, energy is everything, especially when you want the creativity of others and the commitment in tough times. I'm interested in the careers you've had so far, and the roles you've had in marketing have been in quite different organisations. But across them all, how have you tried to keep marketing relevant? You know, what is it for you that's been very important, making sure the leadership in the organisation and everybody inside that organisation can see the true value of marketing and what role it plays in the business?
Well, I think marketing has a lot of strengths, and you know, a lot of it has been about thinking about, you know, how do you take those combined strengths and continue to kind of hold the flag and continue to push forward. And I think, you know, some of those strengths, you know, certainly the thing that kind of becomes that kind of red thread across everything I've done has been that ambiguity, that change, that disruption. And I think in marketing in particular, you know, we have at our kind of fingertips now so much of the data, the analytics, the being on the pulse of tracking audiences, that we have the ability to see that, really kind of extrapolate some of those macro trends and some of those projections and where it can be, and then combine that really with our creativity to kind of imagine where we can go next. And when you're looking at setting vision, I think that's an important combination of skills to have, and marketers have them, right? So, you know, with Skype, for example, you know, as we're moving into from single video calling into group video calling and into pervasive chat, we've suddenly become a collaboration tool. And there is just so much possibility in that, in building businesses, you know, in kind of creating whole new experiences in entertainment, right? The ability to kind of access and participate in an experience, you know, and we would blow that up. We would take 30 people from around the world and, you know, stream them into the stage of TED, you know, the final kind of moment of TED in 2013 with a live choir. And you can have this experience that, you know, would never have happened otherwise. You can imagine, you know, whole new ways of co-creating experiences with Marvel, which we did, right? Which was to enable participants to partake in, you know, global press tours, but also to set up massive jumbotrons on the red carpet of like Iron Man 2 or Avengers 2 and link them to children's hospitals, or link them to, you know, from El Capitan in LA to, you know, Madison Square Park in New York, or with army bases. There are so many ways of being able to imagine those experiences and bring them to life. And I think that's something that marketeers have in spades, is that combination. I think the other thing that we have is, you know, that ability to kind of, you know, keep it real, right? We know what audiences are saying, and so much of those connections are at that one-to-one level, not just at the macro data level, right? And, you know, sometimes as well, I think, you know, we've got a job to do, which is in that overabundance almost of data and analytics, it's partly about making sure that we join up those dots, that we see that bigger picture, you know, and that we are able to really hold true to core audience and consumer need states and desires, the why of it, which really hasn't changed fundamentally, even with all the fucking data points in the world, right? And then I think the other way in which certainly I think I've been able to keep marketing successful is maybe in working across so many industries and actually doing slightly different problems every time and having a broader mix of acquisition marketing on the one side through to kind of brand and product marketing on the other, is that it makes you multilingual. And in a world where you are working across more connected digital ecosystems or products than ever before, and in a world where you've got to, you know, rethink models and understand that what your brand is today may not be where your brand will be tomorrow, being able to kind of think about that and then translate that into customer management, into product, into, you know, content, you know, experiences, those things are vitally important in taking a kind of a strategy and realizing it.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much in there that I love. That point about the best marketers being able to be creative and imagine and have a sense of see the potential and the vision and set the vision at the same time as being incredibly practical and keeping it real and making it commercial. That the balance of that together with the multilingual, taking everything and grounding it back in what the customer and the consumer fundamentally wants. It's actually, when you put it like that, it's hard, but it's so
really hard, but it's bloody awesome, isn't it?
When it works, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. So what advice would you then offer other people right now who are going into quite complex businesses and wanting to just make sure that their marketing role is at the core of all that and how they're going to deal with it?
Well, a lot of what we talked about, but I think, you know, I think one of the challenges I've certainly had has been, you know, you've got many, many teams. You've got partner marketing teams, you've got content marketing teams, you've got, like, you know, acquisition and regional marketing teams and so forth. And the key for me has always been to try to ensure that you have cross-functional teams, mm-hmm. that you are building integrated marketing teams, that although you might have various other objectives across each of the marketing functions, there are always going to be some core objectives that you need to kind of be playing for. And there is an art in the process of bringing those integrated teams together to kind of forge those plans and build out those shared goals. That will make it easier for at least marketing to understand what it's going for and be able to communicate it to the rest of the organization, right? Because each of those marketing teams will interface with slightly different areas of the org.
But you need to be so good at the internal communication.
You do. You really do.
Talking about the internal processes and getting people on board internally, I want to shift to something else that I know Netflix has been involved in this year in terms of making a statement on Black Lives Matter. Now, the response was very fast from Netflix, and often those kind of decisions internally can go through a huge approval process. How was it for Netflix, and how did it feel for you to be involved with that?
Yeah, I think this is really where Reed's just written the book, where that culture of freedom and responsibility really comes into its own. And then on the flip side, a very inherent brand and culture that wholeheartedly believes that more people deserve to be seen on screen, right? And that there are underserved audiences out there that, you know, that have stories that we need to tell. And I think that combination, Sophie, made it quite easy for us actually to kind of pull that through. The other thing is, you know, on the content side, we were well placed, but also on the social side, we have a lot of channels that actually speak to that. So strong Black leads speak to that. We have Contordo, which is all about US Hispanic audiences. We have The Most, which is all about our LGBTQ plus audiences. So we are running the thread and tracking conversations the whole way through, and we're participating in them. And so, you know, those teams, those editorial teams in particular, were tracking it the whole way through from Memorial Weekend on. They flagged it, and, you know, they heavily recommended that this was the moment we needed to take a stand. And so my chief comms officer and myself, both of us, you know, it got flagged to us. And when you look at it and you're reading the moment and you're understanding where it's going, and you feel strength of confidence that your brand can stand and live up to it, then you can go. And so we went, and we went that day.
Super. I mean, that constant tracking and awareness of what's going on and listening to what's needed, but also then being structured for speed so you can be both responsive and responsible in that situation. Such a interesting thing to be part of. I'm acutely conscious, Jackie, that I've got a million.
We've already, yes.
And I want to be a bit more democratic, because I know there's some great questions already coming through on Q&A. What we'd like to invite everyone listening to do is please put your questions on Q&A, any more for Jackie. And if it's okay, what we'd love to do is invite those people who are asking those questions to come and show their faces as well. And I can see there's a few great questions in there already. Can I call perhaps on, let's go to Lindsay. Is being very positive about the brand campaign. Lindsay Dixon, are you there? Are you up for coming on and joining us and saying hello to Jackie and asking your question?
Sure. Hi.
Hey, Lindsay.
We can't see you.
Oh, hello. Technology. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. Good morning, guys. I'm really enjoying this morning, and thank you so much. It's been really insightful. Yeah, absolutely love the brand campaign. I actually shared it in one of our Slack chats the other day. We were all having a wee chat about it. And for me, the thing I just wanted to get from yourself was, what do you hope the impact is with your users? Like, what do you want your users to get from that brand campaign? What do you want them to walk away feeling once they've seen it?
You know, I think the thing, Lindsay, is that a lot of what Netflix had centered some of its messaging on years ago was more around the algorithm and it being about my tastes and me and optimizing for me. And what I'm hoping that we're going to get out of this campaign is that, and it's partly due to the scale of what we've been able to create and the scale of conversations that are happening all around the world that join it up. We hope that you're going to feel more of the we about it, and that you're going to understand that actually Netflix can be the place and is the place where we celebrate and illuminate and champion stories from all around the world. And, you know, that you can have audiences from any corner of the world actually connecting to that story. And then we hope, you know, in that world where your story worlds might connect with my story worlds, that leads to something. And sometimes that will lead to a shared feeling, like batshit crazy Tiger King, right? And we all just had that freaking moment where we all just needed to go off the reserve for a little moment and then come back in, and then go off again with Flory's Lava, of course, and then come back again. But there's that sense of shared community around that. And then we hope that there will be moments where that connection will lead to empathy, and with that you might have new perspective. And so, you know, some of the journeys that we've got are from watching to seeing, you know, and we hope that will lead to new perspective. I mean, John Steinbeck talked about, you know, empathy potentially leading to new perspective, and they're all things that we hope, you know, that we can encompass. And we're, you know, this is a North Star, isn't it? This is something that we're still walking towards, but in telling more international stories than ever before, we hope that there'll be much more connections and much more understanding of different perspectives. I think Unorthodox was a great example of that as well.
Love that show.
I know, so good.
So good.
And that was made in Germany, right? So, you know, you just find the universal nature of these stories quite unbelievable sometimes.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Thank you.
And so potentially just building on that, Jackie, surely there is the opportunity for a global campaign like this as well to be unifying both externally and internally. I mean, this year where we are all so much more divided physically, but so much more connected actually in different
ways.
I imagine it's going to be motivating internally as well for the teams to be part of something and to be part of something together. So you hope a global campaign.
Yeah, that's exactly what you hope. And, you know, I think Netflix inherently, like Virgin that I've worked for or BBC that I've worked for, has an inherent sense of that purpose. And this is just about externally going out with confidence and communicating it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm going to call on Gemma now. Gemma Batterby has got some interesting questions to ask you. Gemma, are you there? Hello.
I am. Hello. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Gemma.
Hi, Jacqueline. Thanks, Sophie and Jacqueline, for your insights. My question centres around brands creating real entertainment. And I guess as we see audiences shift to these ad-free platforms like Netflix or take out subscriptions that remove advertising from the mix, you know, we've seen Unilever create Dads earlier this year, which streamed on Apple. We saw J&J create 5B last year. Do you think there's a trend coming now where brands are going to start to create real entertainment, not branded content, not long-form ads, but true entertainment that really reaches these audiences globally?
Yeah, I think, Gemma, that's been an ambition for brands for the last few years, is to find really compelling stories that they can produce. Because, yes, as you say, distribution content is the problem, right? It's not the money, it's being able to kind of get the right reach to audiences. So yes, I'm expecting much more of it. It is a really tricky thing to do, right? Even just trying to find that sweet spot where you're creating entertaining content for your own channels is challenging, let alone looking at creating that level of programming. But that is where it's going.
Changing times,
and it is
just part of that next wave. Thank you, Gemma. Nicola, I'd like to call on Nicola Wright, who's got a question. Jackie, we've talked quite a lot about creativity here, but of course, maintaining the sharpness of creativity and innovation amongst teams is quite tricky. And Nicola's got a specific question on that. Are you there, Nicola? Possibly, possibly not. All right, I might. Here she comes. Hey, Nicola. She's got a question about fast responses.
Hey, Nicola.
Sorry about that. I don't know what happened. I just kind of completely disappeared and got kicked out of my mind. Yes. Sorry, I had a couple of questions. One was to do particularly with kind of Zoom and that working on VCs. And one of the things I've noticed quite often happens in meetings, particularly like a big team meeting, is you get people obviously turn their camera off, and some of the time you're not even actually sure if they're there, and everybody goes on mute, and then, you know, they're kind of on the screens disappearing. How, you know, obviously you've got the added challenge of a time zone, so I assume at least you don't have your kids potentially walking in the middle of your meeting.
Oh, I disrupted my doggy's sleep schedule, Nicola.
how are you working to kind of try and keep everybody in? You know, what sort of tricks have you been using for that?
It has been really hard, Nicola. I mean, some of my necessarily when you've got a team of about 700, you can't even have them all on the call with you. You know, you've got to do a Google Meet, and then you've got to live stream it out. So it's very difficult at that level of scale to be able to ensure that people are properly engaged. I think we have a number of things, like we always have live documents that people are, like, you know, as we've gone through the brand work, people get pre-reads, they're exposed to it. It's that sort of culture at Netflix, where you get actually a lot of interaction off almost every other medium as well as on a VC. But, you know, we had to be really conscious of how we would navigate our way through questions with teams at that size. And what was always more effective was when we broke it down into smaller working groups. And that's got to be done at, you know, at various levels. And then I'd have to join other groups that were more intimate so that you could have a more specific set of conversations. Otherwise, you end up, when you've got teams that big, you end up with very general, you know, presentations or chats that don't get into the heart of really what your teams want to know, right, about what's going on with partner marketing in India or whatever the case might be. And so I think more than ever, you end up spending time having conversations at every level as much as you can to kind of keep that rhythm and that dialogue going. And then, as I said earlier, we had some shared sense of purpose, you know, one in terms of what we were doing to help our users around the world, and then the other one really around the brand campaign. And those things galvanized and gave us collective energy. And in particular, the brand work was so new that you had very engaged, you know, teams. So I think the challenge now will be keeping that up, as we all know, right? Through the course of the next, you know, it's an ultra marathon. And I think the challenge for us now is, because I was just talking to Sophie about whether she'd let up over the summer, and of course she hasn't, you know, and you kind of go, okay, well, there, this constancy, you know, how do we kind of let people replenish? That's really, really important now. And, you know, how do you creatively think about new ways to spark energy as well? I think that's a really enormous challenge. And I don't know what answers I've got for that. In fact, I myself am now going to try to decompress a little bit and wean myself off the Netflix drug. And I mean the Netflix work drug. That's before I get to the Netflix other drug, right? At least I don't have to watch shows endlessly now. I can like take it down a level. But I think those moments of quiet, those moments of pause are much more important now than I've ever given it credit for in the past. And allowing that for teams around the world is like vitally important. And this is a culture that doesn't really take a lot of time off, and we're under freedom responsibility. I can't even say go take a day off. I have to heavily recommend it.
Yeah.
Nicola, are you calling in from a particularly creative company? Are you looking at this yourself?
So I work in insurance, so we're not famously creative, although the company I work for, you know, have always tried to be distinct and sort of be, we always describe ourselves as being in the category but not of the category. So we've you know, consistently tried to kind of look for new ways of doing things. But I suppose the other question I had is also around kind of creativity under lockdown, and that whole challenge of sparking kind of really innovative creativity when everyone has been so isolated and, you know, just kind of getting the same stimulus. It's much harder to kind of break free when you don't have that same interaction with people and that kind of working in groups, and time does seem to be more pressured. Those kind of frivolous, you know, previous kind of water cooler type chats that could spark something completely creative have completely disappeared. And often you're working on things much more in your own rather than being able to turn to a person behind you and just sort of vent and potentially suddenly come out with a completely new direction.
I love Jackie, one of Jackie's suggestions just there, for which is linked to an answer to that, I think, that idea of the small squads, the smaller teams, you know, generally you break out to break through, and creating those smaller teams maybe not only helps them be more creative, but helps them allow a bit more time to have connections. The bigger a group, the harder it is to have those side conversations. I don't know, Jackie, is that...
Yeah. And I think, I mean, it's so freaking artificial, isn't it, Nicola, when you try to do happy hours and whatever, but we have desperately all tried to kind of find more relaxed ways of having conversations. But yes, the serendipitous moments when you're at the coffee machine, very difficult to replicate. So I think brainstorming sessions and all that, definitely way more difficult to do in this current environment. You just have to find as much as you can workarounds. And I think the other bit around media is like when I want a break, and I'm always consuming content, but when I want a break, I get off the video and then I go and listen to Great Lives or something on the BBC. You know, I kind of find creative inspiration by actually looking at different architecture talk. You know, you kind of do other things so that you're not constantly thinking about the here and now in front of you, your work, but you're making other links.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you, Nicola. Great, great questions. It's so important. It's such a responsibility when you work in marketing to make sure you've got that creativity and that inspiration and that ability to make connections, but somehow we've got to make time and make time to connect with each other. Talking of time, we are starting to run out a little bit, so I'm just going to ask, I don't know if Nancy is there to come on to just ask a question about culture, because I know, Jackie, you've moved through lots of different types of organisations, and the culture must be difficult. Hi, Nancy.
Nancy. Hello. I know, Nancy. Sorry.
So is there a story behind this question? You're on mute, Nancy. It's the first time in this call we've said that.
Sorry. Hey, Jackie. Nice to see you. Hello. I wanted to ask a question you can imagine of how was the leap? How was the leap from a public service-owned company like BBC Studios to the giant that is Netflix and the scale and the resource available? Just, you know, because you would imagine that that's like being unleashed as a marketeer, right? You know, you've got everything at your fingertips, but, you know, that's not, I'm not sure that's always probably a good thing, or I just wondered how that leap was. It just, it felt, you know, felt huge, and you were the person to do it, but really interested a year down the line how that felt.
Well, you know, I think the thing about it, Nancy, was in studios and in Tim, there was always a level of pace, right? Not quite on the steroids that, you know, that Netflix has, but in that many titles globally and global audiences, I think there was quite a bit of it that meant that I could pull up. There were differences. There are quite radical differences in terms of the level of transparency, right? And there were definitely cultural differences there. That notion of 360 feedback, you know, we had some of it actually at the Beeb with Office Vibe and all that, but it is much more direct, and the incoming is much more intensive at Netflix. And, you know, at the BBC, there was a good pace to it. At Netflix, there was a 24/7 pace to it, right? And so you have to kind of adjust to that level of intensity. And, you know, in many ways that was a good thing. And in many ways you kind of go, well, there was great balance at the BBC. I loved that about the BBC. And, you know, I think culturally both have a sense of purpose, but the BBC has a really ingrained sense of purpose, which I always loved about it. It's also what I loved a lot about Virgin, right? And that pulls it forward. So there was that. In terms of the budgets, yes, it was an insane, ridiculous change out on budgets. But I think that what we had to do at the BBC, which you know, is we had to have great confidence in the quality of our IP and to use that to kind of expand it out. So at the BBC, a lot of what we did was to say, you know what, this stuff that we're doing around BBC Earth and Blue Planet 2 and Planet Earth 2, it's bloody great and it's properly purposeful. And it will spark action. We just need to get it out to as many global audiences as possible and younger audiences. So putting it on to Tencent, doing, doing Snap, doing three-dimensional Google Earth. This is all about kind of getting more community and sparking more action, right? What you worked on, right? Sustainability, sustainable fashion, what we did with Mother of Pearl, how we did Radiohead with Hans Zimmer and Sia and got Sir David on that Glastonbury stage. That is all about doing a lot with very little and with the strength of your IP. And I think that is a lesson that Netflix can learn when it starts to think about tentpole IP and how does it build it out and work it harder, because it's not just about being a network, it's about being a studio. And then, yes, there is. I did kind of look at, you know, in a world where it's not just about US titles out to the rest of the world,
but you are looking at having to build up titles out of the UK for the rest of the world, or Spain to the rest of the world, or Mexico to the rest of the world, then there is a level of discipline around how to manage your asset suite and your costs that you can learn a lot from, having worked from other other companies that had far less budget into this, that will help Netflix manage the scale of it. And that's really important too.
Love this. I'm going to have to, because we're running out of time. Thank you, Nancy. Great. And it's so interesting, the things you learn from the different cultures and what you can take to it. It's a brilliant question. And thank you, Jackie, for so much honesty today, generally, with that question, with all of it, for your brilliance. Everybody listening, there is going to be a very, very quick, super fast poll about to appear on your screen. Tell us what you thought of today. We'd love to hear your feedback always. And please come and connect with me or with anybody in the Marketing Society if you've got more thoughts and questions on it. Sorry to the guys who asked questions that we couldn't answer. Never enough time to have to spend time with Jackie and everything she's got to do. Also, everybody listening, please join us for some more conversations like this. Our next Under the Spotlight is with a dynamic duo. Start of October, we have Greg and Rebecca joining us from one of the fastest growth companies in the UK, Octopus Energy, to talk about the role of CEO and marketing together. We've also got a great Scotland conversation coming up on the 24th, with our Star Awards Gold winners sharing their stories. And last but not least, we'll end this month with that global conversation I mentioned, where we will be discussing how on earth we plan for 2021. But I've come away from today feeling so inspired by Jackie's stories about the potential. She can always see the potential in what's happening. There's always an opportunity, and you can always be positive about that. So your FOMO that started all this is a great, great skill to have and strength to have. And I can't wait to see what you're going to do next, Jackie. Although hopefully there is this pause now to reflect and recharge. You've got to do that. We've got to slow down now. Thank you so much for joining us today. Really, really appreciate it. And you know, I know that everybody will come away feeling a little bit more inspired about what's possible with a bit of energy like yours. Thank you very much. Thanks everybody in the chat. We will see you all really soon. Bye.
Thanks guys for joining.